So we now come to the final two songs of this Song of Songs. She opens the love dialogue, which it is. They're both going to talk to each other. I went down to the nut orchard to look at the blossoms of the valley, to see whether the vines had budded, whether the pomegranates were in bloom. I do not know myself. I find myself in a chariot beside my prince. In ancient Near Eastern mythology, the walnut was thought to be an aphrodisiac. From my reading, they seem to find everything an aphrodisiac. But anyhow, so, you know, if you don't know, give it a go. So, and the walnut was supposed to have magical qualities. She responds to him, ready to seize the moment for love. She's not disappointed, finding herself being transported in the majestic chariot of her lover. You know, the white horse thing and the prince sweeping you and all that stuff. The chorus butt in a bit and they say, "Turn, turn, O Shulamite, turn that we may look upon you." Shulamite, what's it mean? Probably nothing. But if you look at the Hebrew, you'll see this is Shlomo, Solomon in Hebrew, and Shulamit, it's the feminine form of Solomon. So it's Solomon's one, really. So she's given the female name, made up, to fit with Solomon. And he says, "Why should you look upon the Shulamite as upon the dance of two companies?" No one knows what that is, but it sounds like it was a dance at the of the time, and people looking and enjoying the dance as the, you know, like whatever. It's not on a show. She's not on show. She's mine, and etc. So they're gazing upon her as though it was some kind of a show that had come to town. And then he says, "How graceful are your feet in sandals, O queenly maiden! Your rounded thighs are like jewels, the work of a master hand. Your navel is a rounded bowl that never lacks mixed wine. Your belly is a heap of wheat encircled with lilies. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. Your neck is like an ivory tower." If I were you and I was married, I would get that off by heart and try it.
So they're tell you to get lost.
There it is. So he's captivated by her dancing, which draws his attention first to her sandaled feet. He speaks of her exquisitely formed thighs undulating in this sensuous dance. He marvels at her navel and pubic area. And in the description of the breasts and the neck, recall earlier descriptions which we've already heard. "Your eyes are pools in Heshbon by the gate of Bath Rabin. Your nose..." Behave yourselves, everybody. "Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon looking toward Damascus." That mightn't go over too well. So it might, anyhow, just to fill in why it might have been attractive in their day, not so much. Heshbon was the royal city of the Amorites. The water from the city's reservoirs was carried through the gate to the villages that depended on the mother city. Hence the gate is called Bath Rabim, many daughters. Bath is a daughter, Ben is a son. Bath Rabim, to many daughters. So it's gushing out through. "Her regal demeanour is emphasised by comparing her nose to a tower with reference to Lebanon and Damascus." He continues, while she blushes with delight at what he's already just said about her neck, her nose. He says, "Your head crowns you like karma. Your flowing locks are like purple. A king is held captive in its tresses." She's been calling him a king Solomon, you've got those little references. How fair, he says, how fair and pleasant you are, O loved one, delightful maiden. You are stately as a palm tree. Your breasts are like its clusters. I will climb the palm tree and lay hold of its branches. And the man now speaks of the delights of her body that he anticipates enjoying. He likens her elegance and grace to that of the date palm. Its clusters of dates high up the tree resembled her maturing and enticing breasts. He'll climb the palm, thus penetrating to where he can harvest the fruit of love. And he continues, may your breasts be like the clusters of the vine, and the scent of your breath like apples, and your kisses like the best wine. He's intoxicated by the taste and smell of her breasts, her breath, and her lips as they kiss. Not to be outdone, she replies. Indeed, the wine flows smoothly for my beloved, gliding over lips and teeth. I am my beloved's. His desire is for me. Come, my beloved, let us go forth into the fields and lodge among the henna bushes. Let us go out early to the vineyards and see whether the vines have budded, whether the grape blossoms have opened and the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. She knows he's right. She delights in the pleasure her kisses, her wine give him. She invites him to go with her to the fields outside the city to spend the night surrounded by the perfume of the henna bushes. The signs of spring invite them to express their renewed love. She continues, the mandrakes give forth fragrance. Over our doors are its choicest fruit, new as well as old, which I have kept for you, my beloved. The mandrakes, in the Hebrew is dudaim, resemble the sound of love, dode, dudaim. So they're playing with words. And they were also, among other things, as we've noted, considered an aphrodisiac and were associated with fertility. So she invites him to enjoy the pleasures that she stored up for him in the arbour leading into the place where they will enjoy their lovemaking. Lovemaking? Dodim. Another, not a pun on words, but a resemblance. And she continues, oh, that you would like a brother to me who nursed at my mother's breasts. If I met you outside, this covers a question asked earlier, I could kiss you and no one would despise me. You're allowed to kiss your brother, but you're not allowed anything else publicly. I would lead you and bring you into the house of my mother, into the chamber of the one who So she yearns for him. She wants to live with him continuously, the way a sister lives with her brother. Then they could kiss freely in public without shame or embarrassment. She wants to be able to kiss him and have him kiss her anywhere at any time. And she promises, I would give you spiced wine to drink, the juice of my pomegranates. Images keep returning. I've got a little Hebrew thing there for you with English lettering. I would give you to drink is ashkeka. In Hebrew, I will kiss you is eshakeka. So they're punning on the poetry, it is. So there's assonance and so on happening. And she then concludes her and this song with an image that she's used elsewhere earlier. His left hand is un. She said, oh, that he. It was a desire in chapter 2, verse 6. Here it's happening. In chapter 8, verse 3, his left hand is under my head and the right hand embraces. blesses me. And once again, the chorus, it's the third time, I think maybe fourth, they turn to the community watching the drama on stage and say, I adjure you, daughters of Jerusalem, do not stir up or awaken love until it's ready. Beautiful advice from the ancient writers of the Song of Songs. This is all very attractive, but to make it real and something that was not just fantasy, one has to wait till you're ready and he's ready and you're both together ready till it's right. And that's the elder community telling their young, just cool it. wait till you're ready. And then the ninth and final song. It's the consummation of shared desire. The chorus begins, who is that coming up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? These words echo chapter 3, verse 6. It's the lovers now emerging from the flowering wilderness. He is supporting her in an embrace that recalls the image just used a moment ago. And she says, under the apple tree I awakened you. There your mother was in labour with you. There she who bore you was in labour. She awakened his desire for her as they lie under the apple tree. Once again, she links their experience with that of her mother. The cycle of lovemaking and life-giving continues to the next generation. And then she sings, set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm. Very beautiful prayer, hope, what everybody marrying would want that. She wants to be identified with him as intimately as a seal. It can't be broken. Sealed. It seals their love. And she wants to be only and the chorus say, love is as strong as death, passion fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, a raging flame. Death is all-consuming. Love is to be like that. Death and the grave are unrelenting in their pursuit. Nothing can stand against them. Love is to be like that. Death and flame, by the way, are Canaanite gods, the Hebrew words. Love's power, in other words, is divine. It's of the gods. Many waters, continue the chorus, cannot quench love. Neither can floods drown it. Again, waters and flood recall the gods of chaos, that the gods of chaos cannot overpower love. And they continue, if one offered for love all the wealth of one's house, it would be utterly scorned. You can't buy love. And all the wealth without love, as beautiful St. Paul says in even more beautiful words later, without love it's all nothing. So it's all about love. I continue. We have a little, going back now, we have a little sister. She has no breasts. What shall we do for our sister on the day when she's spoken for? Promised earlier to somebody, has arranged marriage. If she has a wall, we will build upon her a battlement of silver, we'll protect her, care for her, look after her. But if she is a door, we'll enclose her with boards of cedar. They won't let anyone get to her or spoil her or abuse her or whatever. The chorus recalls the care that was given to protect her when she was a young girl, not yet ready for marriage. The protective barrier that was built around her is compared to a wall protecting a city. As all you mums and dads and grandparents know how you want to protect your little ones. At the same time, care was given to see her beauty mature. Hence the battlement of silver. The gates that defend her from forced entry were also reinforced. That's their song. She responds, I was a wall. My breasts were like towers. Then I was in his eyes as one who brings peace. Like, so it's okay, call off the Alsatians. I'm ready for love. Those who cared for did well, for now she can proclaim that she's well and truly ready for marriage. She has brought her lover peace. And the word for peace in Hebrew is shalom, from which we get Shlomo, Solomon, and the Solomon. So she's brought him peace. Another link with the word Solomon. The man replies, Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Hamon. He entrusted the vineyard to keepers. Each one was to bring for its fruit 1,000 pieces of silver. My vineyard, my very own, is for myself. You, O Solomon, may have 1,000, and the keepers of the fruit, 200. He has her. Solomon's power and wealth put him in a position to require others to care for his vines, and it brought him much wealth. The lover in our poem keeps his vineyard, the woman, for his own, and shares the fruit with no one. And he continues, O you who dwell in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice. Let me hear it. He longs to hear her voice, as do his friends. In chapter 1, verse 3, the other young women couldn't but admire the man she loved. Here, it's the same for the man's friends. They admire her. And she says in response, Make haste, my beloved. Be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountains of spices. That's about the third or fourth time that lovely, idyllic little image has come in. So her reply echoes an earlier response. Here she wants him to leave everything and hasten to the delights that she is keeping for him. And that concludes the song, and I want to let St. Bernard have the last say, since he gave 40 homilies on this. I've only done two. So, is that okay? I've run out of anything I know and half know. So another 38, you can keep coming back if you want. But this is Dear St. Bernard, he writes, My advice to you, my friends, is to turn aside occasionally from troubled and anxious pondering on the paths that you may be treading, to travel on smoother ways, where the gifts of God are serenely savoured, so that the thought of him may give breathing space to you whose consciences are perplexed. I should like you to experience for yourselves the truth of the holy prophet's words, and he quotes the psalm, May the Lord make the Lord your joy, and he will give you what your hearts desire. Psalms 37, verse 4. Sorrow for sin is indeed necessary, but it shouldn't be an endless preoccupation. You must dwell also on the glad remembrance of God's loving kindness. Otherwise, sadness will harden your heart and lead it more deeply into despair. You must fix your attention on the ways of God. See how he mitigates the bitterness of a heart that is crushed, how he wins back the soul lacking in courage from the depths of despair, how he consoles the grief-stricken and strengthens the wavering with the sweet caress of his faithful promise. So here's Bernard pretty well summing up a long tradition of Jewish Christian commentary on the Song of Songs, looking at it now as a sacrament or a symbol of the deep desire we've all got for God, and what he's saying can stop you enjoying the communion, which is the song showed you how delightful it should be at the sexual male-female level. Well, that is a sacrament of the delight that it should be in our union with God and what God is offering us. And the thing that gets in the road is our own self-image or our own putting ourselves down, or other people have put us down often enough for us to take that on board, and we might think we're not worthy, you know, all that stuff that can get in the road, and the sexual training we had as kids too, which make it all a bit tricky, you know, and so on. So this song is meant to somehow help us enjoy that and then see it as a true image of the delight we should have in God and God has in us.
Mm-hmm.
And when God forgives, he doesn't want us to keep remembering anything more than you parents. If your little child did something wrong and you punish them for it or you talk to them about it, if they ran up to you every day for the next fortnight saying they're sorry for what they did last Sunday, every day, wouldn't you worry? You'd have to get some help or try, because something's going wrong in the psyche of the child. They're more aware of their sin than they are of your forgiveness. So we can be more aware of our sins too than of God's forgiveness. So we have to take our sins seriously and learn from it all. That's said there by Bernard. But it's meant to be a delight life for us in communion with God.